Good morning, Ask the Members. This is Jane DeMarchi on the Ask the Staff. Thank you so much to all of you who've joined us today. I think we have a good crowd already, so we thought we would get started and people will join in as we move forward. You were all sent the agenda, I think, along with the invitation. We've made a few updates since the original agenda went out. We're going to be joined by a couple member companies. We're going to talk a little bit about their own experiences over the last few weeks, and that includes Billy Riles from SGS North America, who's going to join in on the lab conversation, and then Brad Bruce from Beck Superior Hybrids and John Schoniker from HM Close are going to talk about how their companies are implementing their plans in this busy season for the industry. You know, I think for all of us, this is such a challenging time, and we're experiencing such dramatic changes in our work lives and our personal lives, and finding, for many of us who are working from home, the mashing of those two a little bit uncomfortably sometimes together, but we're all trying to muddle through. And, you know, from ASSA's perspective, our goal is to provide you with the most useful information possible about primarily relative to the seed industry, since there is such a lot of information out there. But we're very much interested in your feedback of what is the information that you need, and what more we can be providing to you. So you're going to be hearing a number of different topics from our staff, and then we'll also have time for Q&A as well. You can also submit written comments or questions to Ellen Zimmerman, E. Zimmerman, Zimmerman, at betterseed.org if you prefer to do it that way versus a verbal conversation. When we get to the Q&A portion, you'll hear the instructions for how to ask a question. And then do listen. Ellen will call out the first three numbers of your area code. So do keep your ear open when it's your turn to ask a question. We are recording this, and in addition to the recording, we'll also send out a summary of the conversation today, so you'll have that, and you'll be able to distribute that amongst your members, the other folks in your company. So one of the things, just like your business is, you know, the work of ASSA is ongoing while we deal with this crisis. And there's a couple of great big things that happened this week, so I just wanted to update you. Many of you maybe have seen news articles that interest in home gardening is at an all-time high. Lots of people want to plant their own garden. So for the home garden seed section of our industry, they're really experiencing quite a lot of sales. So that is some good news. You know, the work by ASSA staff, Rick is in constant contact with APHIS, probably even, he already was in constant contact with them, and now even more so. Bernice continues her work on plant breeding innovation. As we talked about last week, there are still a lot of letters circulating about asking the government to ease regulations or to pull back on implementation of regulation or is seeking comments on proposed regulations. No decisions have come out of the federal government yet, but I did see that yesterday EPA announced some enforcement discretion on their regulations due to the coronavirus, and we'll send that announcement out to you in our summary document. Some other good news, USDR granted tariff exclusions for 7 of the 20 seed products that we submitted. We're still waiting to hear on the rest, but, you know, the good news is that now that's a retroactive decision, so those companies will be able to get their money back for the tariffs that they paid. Jennifer hosted yesterday the call for the CSS Planning Committee, and exhibit registration is now live, so they're planning a great conference for December. We have a cover crop survey that went out this week to farmers, and we're encouraging our members to get their customers to submit responses to that survey. We got new hemp handouts on the website, and we're starting our seed treatment stewardship campaign again as we get into the planting season. So there's a lot of positive happening in addition to our work on COVID-19. And with that, I'm just going to move into the COVID-19 portion of the agenda. So in my area that I've been working on is this critical infrastructure issue. We are expecting today an update from DHS on their list of what is considered critical infrastructure. As you guys know, seed is considered an ag input but was not explicitly referenced in the document. We're very hopeful that that will be changed. But because we've gotten so many questions from members about sort of what is in and what is out, we did prepare a memo with the help of Hogan Lovells, our law firm, to explain, you know, how ASTA views the seed industry as an integrated system with a lot of different parts that are all critical. That it was sent out with the invitation for this meeting, and that memo is also on our website. If we miss some aspect of the seed industry that you think should be included, please let me know and we can make that adjustment. You know, I've been participating in DHS calls where, you know, again, they make it very clear that ultimately the implementation of this critical infrastructure designation is done at the state and local level. Most states are pretty well aligned with DHS, but not all. But, you know, I was on this very broad call. I think there was only one person who said they had one employee who had been pulled over on their way to work. So I think it generally does seem to be working. Industry really implored DHS to get a hold of that system and make it more, you know, evenly applied across the country. And at this point, DHS doesn't seem to have the ability to do that, nor the ability to, say, provide any type of credentialing for employees. So I think things like the template letters that we supplied to you that are on our members-only website at the moment, I think, are sort of, you know, as good as it's going to get for the meantime. And then just lastly, I wanted to mention, you know, we're trying not to inundate you with information, but one of the things that was mentioned on the DHS call was they're very concerned about cybercrime ramping up in this time because so many companies have moved so many employees to remote access. And on the CISA, it's CISA.gov website, there's a lot of information about protecting your business from cybercrime and cybersecurity. So you may want to check that out, or you may want to ask your IT folks, you know, how things are looking for you on the cybersecurity front. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Pat Miller to talk about state issues.
Hi, good morning, everybody. I hope everybody's healthy and safe. We, on the states, it's kind of an interesting dynamic going on. Most of the state legislatures have either gone into a recess or have hurried up and finished their sessions. And if anything, any of the business that they've been working on has just been set aside, and everything is talking about COVID-19. And all of those bills that are being filed and the discussions that are being made are mostly financial, allocating funds for different services, that type of thing, or, as Jane mentioned, relaxing some of the rules a little bit so that people can navigate through this. But we're, you know, still watching them. But and then on the other than legislation, the regulatory side, that's just pretty much ceased. All the departments of ag and the other regulatory authorities have either gone to skeleton crews or just have bare necessities operating. And as an example, some of the regulatory side, a lot of the states aren't. They're not having field inspections or those types of things. So it's everything's just paused right now, which is not a bad thing, and focused on COVID-19. So don't really have too much to report there. They have agriculture has been left alone in all 50 states, I think, just to do their general business, and they're doing a heck of a job with it and shifting gears on that. So that's about all I got in the states. Not any real hard and fast news there. So with that, I'll turn it over to Virginia to talk a little bit about trucking.
Thanks, Pat. Good morning, everyone. I have some updates for you of things that have occurred over the past week since our last call, and we'll start with transportation. And I will go ahead and preface before I start. These updates that I'll be going over have been added to the Ask the website, and I will let you know where you can find this information. So on Tuesday, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration issued a temporary waiver for some drivers with CDLs to address disruptions in licensing. As many of you know, a lot of government offices like the DMV in certain states are closed, and there is concern that with those offices closed, that will exacerbate the trucker shortage issue around COVID-19 if truckers cannot renew their licenses. So this temporary waiver will allow the FMCSA to exercise enforcement discretion in certain cases when a commercial learner's permit, CDL, or medical certificate is expired. We've linked to the notice of enforcement policy and the waiver on the Ask the COVID-19 website under transportation. This waiver will expire on June 30th of this year. Also on Wednesday, the FMCSA expanded their emergency declaration for hours of service relief for drivers engaged in providing critical materials to combat the COVID-19 crisis. As of this time, they have added certain ag inputs. Livestock is covered. As of yesterday, feed and fertilizer are covered. However, seed is not currently covered under this hours of service waiver. ASTA did sign a full coalition letter to the FMCSA urging them to swiftly expand this declaration to include the entire ag supply chain, including ag inputs. And we are also working with several other associations, the Ag Retailers and CropLife America, to lean on USDA to help encourage the FMCSA to expand the declaration and grant all of ag a temporary hours of service waiver under their emergency declaration. So that is ongoing. I hope to have an update for you in the next couple of days. They did say, however, they are actively considering expanding the declaration every day, and that seed is under consideration. But right now, it does not fall under the declaration. For immigration and labor, some of you will have seen yesterday, but yesterday the State Department announced that they have expanded interview waiver eligibility to ensure the majority of H-2 processing can continue. This is an effort to ensure both returning and new H-2 visas can get to the U.S. As quickly as possible. So consulates can waive the visa interview requirements for first-time and returning applicants who have no potential ineligibility. And the expansion also increases the period for which returning workers can qualify for interview waivers. So now it's if a returning worker is coming back within 48 months for an H-2 visa. If there is a visa applicant who has security issues, it is still unlikely they'll be processed. Again, this is up to the individual consulates, but the missions in Mexico issue 88.2% of all H-2 visas and 74% of all H-2B visas. We have posted a Q&A document from the State Department on the ASTA COVID-19 public-facing website, and there's also a Q&A document for employers who have contract questions from American Hort. That has been posted on the Ask the Members Only website. That's more practical questions like, what if I have an employee whose contract is expiring? That can be found on the Members Only website. Jumping back to trucking real quick, also on the Ask the Members Only website, we did receive a question to Ellen before this call about guidance for truck drivers who are signing over any contracts as far as their shipments without contact. We're working with the American Trucking Association on guidance, but the ag retailers did provide some documents that they had given to their members about a signature app, which is legally binding. That information and how to download the app and the steps to go through can be found on the Ask the Members Only website. But as we have more ideas about how to maintain social distancing but still ensure you that your drivers can sign over their cargo to its final destination, we'll post those on the website. That is all the updates I have, so I think we have Q&A now for domestic.
We have
Ellen, do you have follow-up questions? Okay.
Yep. 317, you should be unmuted.
Issues that you were talking about, could you send those out in an email form just so we have a hard copy of those specifics?
Can you say the beginning part of your question again?
Yeah, could you send out the H-2A labor details in written form just so we have those? I was trying to write down notes, but it was difficult to keep up and hear everything.
Hey, Scott? No, Scott.
Yes.
This is Virginia. Yes, we'll have this out to you. Everything I went through is already on the website, but I know that we will be sending out a post-call recap that will have the notes captured of what we went over today. So, yes, we'll get that
great
to you.
Thanks, Virginia.
I have a 202 number with a question. Okay. That's the end of the queue that I have here. Do you have any questions?
All right, then
feel free to email them to me, ezimmerman@betterseat.org, or we'll have other Q&A sessions throughout the call as well.
All right, with that, we'll turn it over to Pat Miller, who will kick off the conversation about seed testing and lab.
Thanks, Jane. With regard to state seed testing labs, we have a document that's posted to our website that gets updated a couple of times a day, actually, of all the status of all the state regulatory labs. And so far, there's about six that have closed, just shut the doors and people gone home. But most, obviously, are operating with skeleton crews, but they are trying to keep up as best they can. They all anticipate getting behind just because of the way they're having to work and trying to limit staff contact, that type of thing. But they're trying really hard to, and then some of them are working swing shifts and things like that just to do whatever they can to do their job. I applaud the extra effort that they've put out. But if you have a question about a lab in a particular state, certainly check in with them and on our website for that live list that's working. Today, just to give us an insight a little bit into the life of a lab and some of the things that are happening, as we are lucky enough to have Billy Riles with us. I've worked with before, an operations manager at the Brookings SGS North America location. And SGS, of course, is leader in labs, and they're doing quite a bit of extra work worldwide on some things. And so with that, I'd turn it over to Billy to kind of fill us in on kind of your perspectives on what's going on in the lab world right now.
Yeah, thank you, Pat, and thank you, everybody, for allowing me to come on and speak to you all today. So when we looked at the lab and how we were going to tackle this challenge, we kept two things in mind, and one is how we were going to keep our employees healthy and safe as we could, and then also how we were going to keep the seed lab running through this time. So we implemented two different plans, kind of, that we are running coherently together. The first thing we are lucky enough to be able to do is to break the lab up into zones. And so we have different break rooms, different restrooms, different things for all of our employees. And so we really minimized, instead of potentially coming in contact with or things like that of 100 people a day, that really broke it up into maybe you would see 30 people a day. So that was the first part of our plan. And then the second thing, what we did, and we started 2 weeks ago, was we broke, instead of working a 5-day week, we went to a 7-day week, and we broke our people up even further into two different shifts. And so they're working 10-hour days and rotating days off and days on. And what we did is we looked at all of our staff and their skill level and who had knowledge in what testing and what technologies, and we split them to ensure that every day there would be at least multiple people here that could run all the testing and have all of the information and knowledge needed to keep the lab running. And so that really thinned out our contact and kept us up with that social distancing as well. And so we're able to keep running the lab and keep it open while making sure that our employees are really staying a safe distance from each other and being healthy. We also have, you know, four smaller locations that do more field type work with much smaller crews. So four people crews, what we did for them was kind of the same concept, but on a much smaller scale. We only have two people going in at a time and two people at home working from home. And then they switch off after cleaning between. We also hired on a couple seasonals and brought them back early so they could be three-person teams, so when the season really starts up and field work starts up, that we would have plenty of people to get the work done. So that's kind of how we've operated. We feel you know, pretty good about how we're doing right now, and that's the plans we put in place.
Very good. Thank you, Billy. Yep. One thing just real quick that I failed to mention is with Puerto Rico, it's kind of a unique circumstance over there. They initially shut down all of their labs, but now they've got them, the inspectors out working half days, specifically around Ponce. If any of you have business in doing grow outs or research plots, that type of thing, that's a significant change for you. And there's the PRDA website has that information listed as well. So with that, moving on, next part of it, talking about labs and testing and that type of thing, Dr. Rick Dunkel has an update for us.
Yeah, a lot of people have been asking about the National Student Health System Laboratories, and, of course, most of those are third-party labs that are accredited through the National Student Health System to do student health testing. And the word I'm getting there is that these labs are still functioning similar to SGS. They've had to make some significant modifications in their protocols, gone to split shifts and other things, but they are still open for business. And in regard to the Iowa State Lab, it is still open for business as well. They have made some significant changes in their protocols too. They've moved some of their operations into their training labs and testing and teaching labs to keep space between their technicians, and they've gone to swing shifts and these kinds of things. But they feel pretty confident that at this stage of the game, they're operating quite nicely. They did recently get an influx of samples, a significant influx of samples to process, and so they're going to try to keep up with this as best they can, but they're still open for business.
Pat, I have a question come in over email. Can you expand on the field inspection situation?
Yeah, most of the labs are just operating with what they have. If people want to submit service samples, they can drop them off. There's usually a box outside, that type of thing. But the field inspectors out doing, poking bags, most of the states have them kind of pulled in right now, and they're not doing that.
In regard to Puerto Rico, to get seed onto the mainland, where Puerto Rico has limitations, APHIS is stepping in and doing the seed inspections and things that they need to do to get the phytos issued over there to get the seed onto the mainland. So again, if any of you are having any issues with that, let me know and I'll help you out.
Very good. Any other questions, Ellen?
The queue is open, so if you have a question, push 01 to enter the queue. I don't have any Oh, we just had one come in. You are unmuted.
Hi, this is Krista from Montana, and I couldn't follow directions on the last set of questions. Montana goes into shelter in place effective tomorrow, and my question is about the home gardening products and plant protection products, et cetera. Has anybody had any success with having any of that considered essential as far as keeping open stores like Lowe's and Home Depot, et cetera?
This is Jane. I know on the retail side, specifically what you're talking about, there's been conversations about that, but I don't know how they're resolved. I will check back in with American Hort, which has been sort of, they've been my conduit to that conversation. We do know that there's a concerted effort to get nurseries and greenhouse operations specifically mentioned in the DHS critical infrastructure list. But I think generally what, you know, people are being told is if you have, say, an operation that does some ag, but then maybe some flowers, that you're still considered essential because of the ag component, that you wouldn't need to split up the different aspects of your business. But I'll see if I can find out more about what's happening on the retail end. And I know, as near as I can tell, the home garden, at least on the seed supply, they're continuing to operate.
Thank you.
You're unmuted. Go for it.
Question for Pat. Is there any provisions for certified seed analysts for specific crops? Example, be certified, say, for soybeans or sorghum or corn. That would facilitate the germination requirements for labeling, possibly in these kind of circumstances?
You know, that's a good question. For the certification side of it, I haven't communicated much with the certifying agencies. I know that Chet Borff was going to be on this call. I don't know if he is. Maybe if he's available, he could step in and fill that in. Now, the states that rely on, I don't know. I'll have to find out for you. I'll get back to you. Let's get back to you. It's a good question.
You are unmuted.
This is Chris Annabini from California Seed Association, but also from the Plant California Alliance. And to answer the question about nursery operations, we actually put out a statement to our industry, to the nursery industry last week, based on our evaluation and discussion with the California Farm Bureau that nursery operations are essential, including retail operations. So, but here in California, it really depends on the county directive, whether they can operate or not, and whether the county's going to go in and cite them for operations. But because they sell products essential to the production of food, seed, fertilizer, soil, vegetable transplants, fruit trees, we have considered them essential. And most of operations are operating with some additional safeguards in place for employee and customer protection.
Chris, thank you for weighing in on that. All right, should we move over then to the global update? Abigail, you want to kick it off?
Sure, thanks, Jane. Hello, everybody. So on the international side of things, we've been doing two things. We've been keeping up to date on transportation options for moving seed in and out of the U.S., and we've also been talking with our other national seed associations and the International Seed Association to compare notes. So I'm going to start first with transportation. In terms of the ocean ports, we have heard from the executive directors of the ports of LA, Oakland, and Northwest Seaport Alliance, which includes Seattle and Tacoma, and they're all reporting normal operations with some contingency planning in place. So similar to what Billy mentioned, the labs are doing, the ports are doing for their workforce as well. They have shifts coming in, they have cleaning done between the shifts, they're working on getting, you know, sanitizers for truckers coming in, and they're preparing for a situation in which one terminal might need to be shut down temporarily if somebody does get diagnosed. Another thing to note in terms of container supply, the Northwest Seaport Alliance ports are preparing for a surge of imports from China coming in late April, early May. The supplies from Chinese factories are coming back online now that China's recovering from their outbreak. And so they're preparing for some additional congestion at the port and for additional containers. But the flip side of this is that there's going to be a big decrease in demand now from U.S. retailers. And so we might see a shortage of imports coming in later in May and June as people are reducing their orders. And the reason that matters for us is that if there's a shortage of imports, that means there's a shortage of containers for those folks. I'm thinking of the grass seed industry, in particular shipping out of the Pacific Northwest. So that's something that we're going to keep watching. The good news is that essential business not only is extended to ports, but it's also extended to the truckers, railroads, warehouses, and the labor force moving the supply chain. So even in states like Washington and California, where the shelter-in-place orders are in effect, that supply chain is exempt. One thing that we'd like to get member feedback on, and maybe you can shoot a note to Ellen about this, is whether folks are experiencing detention and demurrage fees levied by the ocean shipping companies and the terminal operations. These fees are a couple hundred dollars a day if you can't return or pick up your container to the ports within your contracted amount of free time. And what we're concerned about and what we've seen in the past is ocean shipping companies levying these fees when it's actually impossible for the shipper to pick up their container. And we could see that if the ports get congested due to COVID-19. So please keep us posted on that. We're part of a broader effort to lobby the Federal Maritime Commission to issue some policy guidance on when it's appropriate to issue these fees and when not. And we also have some experience fighting those fees. So we'd love to get input from you whether or not you're already experiencing these fines. Switching over to air cargo, we have reached out to the policy folks from the global couriers, so DHL, FedEx, and UPS. I was on the phone with DHL earlier this morning. We know that air cargo is tricky right now, particularly because a lot of cargo is moving in the bellies of passenger planes. So what we heard from DHL is that they are working in addition to their own fleet, they're working on keeping some of those passenger planes moving with cargo only, and they're watching the situation very closely. Their biggest concern is getting is the ability for their private cargo planes to be designated as an essential service in some of these countries. So, for example, he said they're shut out of India right now, and they're working to get an exemption there. And that's kind of something we're going to see in all of these countries that are trading partners is whether or not what's considered an essential service and can the seed get moved out of the country. If we have choke points or areas of concern, they would like to hear about them and they will raise those to their appropriate regional networks. So again, please contact Ellen and she'll get that information to me if you are experiencing problems. In terms of our land borders, we talked about that last week. We talked about the fact that cargo is still moving, but we have these new orders in place restricting movement of people. And we worked with the U.S.-Canada Business Council. They put out a letter, which is on our website, and we included a statement urging SEED to be able to keep moving. And we have understood that Canada is still open for movement of people across the border if they're still doing essential business. And we have our neighbors to the north and south on the call. We have representatives from the Canadian Seed Trade Association as well as Seed Association of the Americas on the line if you have specific questions about those regions. And if you have any, you know, we did a kind of a country-by-country overview last week in terms of what we're seeing, what borders are open. So please contact us if you have any country-specific questions. The last thing that I will point out is that we're working with the International Seed Federation. They are collecting information from all of their member countries on seed shortages, what sort of government restrictions are in place, supply chain issues, lab testing, whether or not seed is considered an essential product, and they've requested feedback. So we're working on pulling that together, and that resource document that they'll have will be very valuable information collected from all the other seed industry associations. So we're looking forward to that. And I think I will leave it there and pass it over to Rick Dunkel to talk about CYTO, and then we'll open the line up for Q&A.
Okay, just very quickly, we had another conference call with APHIS yesterday, and they reassured us that even though they are teleworking and doing many of the same things that we are doing, that they are still accomplishing their mission. They're open for business. They're, you know, maintaining their activities. And also, yesterday afternoon, they issued an update on their website. We have a copy of it, and we put it on our website relative to their import and export activities for plants and plant products. And the main thing there is that for the time being, they've got an arrangement with CBP where CBP will accept electronically produced versions of phytosanitary certificates. So importers and brokers, for example, can upload their electronic documents into the ACE either with the document imaging system or they can do it through email. So there's guidance on this document. There are contact points on this document. So you can either find this on the APHIS website or on the ASTA website. Just a couple of other things real quickly. In terms of the federal orders on tomato seed, those are still in effect. So, again, if you're having issues importing tomato seed or re-exporting tomato seed, let me know. I'll do what I can to help. And APHIS also gave us an update on bilaterals, their technical bilateral meetings they have with countries. And most of them have been canceled, but some of them are going to be held virtually. So, for example, the one with the EU will be held the week of April the 28th. They're still trying to get one organized with Turkey in late May or June. Peru is going to be held the first week in June. And New Zealand is going to be sometime during the week of the 15th of June. Brazil and Chile, they're going to try to, they had one with Brazil organized for March 16th. That got canceled. So they're doing some things routinely through email and whatnot, but they're trying to organize a face-to-face meeting with them probably in late July, as well as Chile. So, again, a lot of the phytosanitary stuff is company-specific or shipment-specific, so if you run into any issues, feel free to get in touch with me, and I will work with APHIS on your behalf to help you out. That's pretty much what I've got.
Before we move into Q&A on the international front, Chet with the Association of Official Seed Certifying Agencies has some information to share on a previous question. Chet, you should unmuted now.
Thanks, Ellen. It says I'm unmuted. Can you hear me okay now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks. Well, I've been on the call, and I heard the question earlier about testing for certified seed samples and that kind of thing. So I just wanted to share a couple of things with you. Earlier this week, we initiated a survey of all of our certifying agencies across the U.S., and we asked them about their seed testing labs and capability and that kind of thing, because all of them, there's no two are quite alike in terms of their situation with staffing and access to buildings and that kind of thing. So I just wanted to get a feel for if we had some problem areas where we could work out and add some help with testing and that kind of thing. It's all across the board, and I can't really give you anything other than a blanket statement. It's my feeling that we really are in pretty good shape with seed testing countrywide and even on a regional basis. There are going to be some places where we've got challenges, but I think we've also identified where we can help those laboratories and their customers out. They might be a little slow in some areas, but I think overall we're going to be okay. So what I was going to suggest for all the folks on the call is it's a case-by-case basis, and rather than for me to try to give you an overall blanket summation, how about if you feel free to contact me? Email is the best way, and if you've got specific questions about a state or a laboratory and how I can help you, I'll get on the phone with you and do that. So if you want to take pen and paper here, my email address is based on my name, C as in cat, B as in boy, O-R-U-F-F, as in Frank, Frank, at AOSCA, AOSCA.org. Drop me a note, tell me what I can help you with, and I'll see what I can do. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you, Chet. I have a question that came in over email, wondering if we knew much about the stimulus package and what options were available for the COVID-driven hardship relief. We've had some of our overseas customers, mainly South Africa, claim that they would no longer be able to pay balance due to the crash of the currency as a result of the COVID outbreak. I was wondering if you knew any specific provisions that we could utilize for help with situations like this one.
Jane, or Virginia, do you want to have any information about that?
Yeah. So specifically for in the third stimulus package coming forth from COVID-19, I think the most applicable provision to take advantage of, there will be opportunities for small business loans. I believe if you employ fewer than 500 employees, there will be loans available. But that is, as far as we've seen, that is the only direct assistance available for agribusiness that will be in this package. They will be working on a phase four. However, that probably won't take place at least for another month. And the House should be voting on that bill. The Senate passed that Wednesday night. The House will be voting this afternoon.
And we do have links to the Small Business Administration loan page on our website, and we'll keep updating that as they come up with new guidance since the stimulus package was passed or is about to be passed. The information that's on there now is current as of, you know, today.
I have a question here in the queue.
Yeah, Chris Annabini here again. On the response to that last question, I think there's some money allocated to the CCC where hopefully some of these issues can be addressed. So I think in, you know, reviewing the relief package, that might be one area where we want to look at and see if there's an opportunity for some of these folks to recover losses under the CCC.
Hey, Chris, thanks for that. This is Virginia. I agree with you. There are funds to replenish the CCC, but what we are hearing from Hill staff is that that money is to be intended for direct payments to producers, similar to the MSP payments over the past year. However, we will keep an eye on that as it moves forward.
Awesome.
Just a reminder, you can get in line to ask your question on the phone call by dialing 01, or you can always email me as well. Oh, I just had a question come in the email. Chris, can you speak to hardware stores? Chris, can you dial 01 so I can unmute you? Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, this is Chris. Hardware stores are definitely essential. And part of that parlays into nursery operations because they do, most of them sell items where you could justify that they have products to do repairs to irrigation systems and things of that nature.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, Brad Britt from Vexperiod Hybrids, why don't we turn it over to you?
Thank you very much, guys. We were asked to give a couple of updates of things that we've been doing here at Vex Hybrids as we respond to this. So just kind of wanted to share some things that we've learned and some of the steps that we've been taking here at Vex Hybrids. So one of the things our management came together a couple weeks ago and created a small task force. So we've got a group of individuals that are communicating on a regular basis. It's been a cross-section of people within our company from our health and safety folks, our HR, operations, management, and marketing team. And so that has been a great resource for us as we kind of work through this and how it affects the different parts of our business. We also kind of created a point person for all the communication that goes on. There's definitely a lot of stuff that's moving and changing, and I think everybody has chosen Friday for conference call updates on this issue. So that's been helpful to funnel everything through a single individual as everything changes very, very quickly. One of the other things that we've done is we created kind of an internal response plan that we've talked about with our management groups, and we've ratcheted through that response plan as we've seen states and even some of our local governments really have a heightened sense of restriction, and so that document has been helpful. We have created a couple of plans that really got us thinking, you know, what happens if we have an outbreak in a facility? What happens if we have an entire shift that goes down? So we hope to never use those documents, but they've been extremely helpful to just think through them. And then also know that the environment's going to change very rapidly. So should we have to enact one of those response plans, it doesn't mean we have to follow it to a T, but it does give us a framework of things and people that we need to be thinking about. One of the things that we did pretty much immediately, and we'd like to thank the folks at ASTA for helping with this, is that we did draft a letter and send it out to all of our senators and representatives and governors in all the states that we have facilities in and market in, mainly around our concerns around transportation and making sure that we keep the commerce alleys open. And so thank you very much to the folks at ASTA that helped us with that. We've received a very positive response from all the people. I think we sent over 300 letters out, and that has been received very nicely. It also just shows that as a sector, agriculture is very concerned about the response, and we're all dedicated to helping get through this. We've been communicating very diligently with our employees. Scott and Sonny Beck, our owners, have been great about sending updates out. They are sending videos from their smartphones, and that has been a huge help for our employees as we're kind of spread out. One of the things that we're also doing is kind of rallying together about 7:30 every morning. There's some emails that come out. One of the things that we've done is, you know, there's a lot of information out there that the state and local stuff, which is where all the enforcement is happening, is changing rapidly. So we've subscribed to all the state information portals that we can. I'm sure this after this event is over that we're going to be getting a lot of emails we didn't want to get. But it has been a good source of information. So by 7:30 every morning, we're sending out an update to our managers with what's changed overnight, and also what's been changing within our business, if there were any changes or adaptations to our plan. So that's been a big help just as a source of communication. One of the things that we have done is we have segregated our employee population, and we made that choice last week with our management team. So we are in the middle of trying to get the last of the seed shipped out to our customers and dealers, and we're trying to accelerate that as much as we can. But we have segregated our employee population. So anybody that can work from home, we're encouraging that. And then critical areas where we've got either in sales operations or our dock, we're going to two shifts where we're separating them. Our plan is if we would get hit with an outbreak, we've got people working from home that could then be healthy and after a detox and a disinfectant can come in and help to backfill that. So we've kind of split our labor in half. And then also the second part of that is in asking them to stay where they're at. So if we've moved them to a facility or they're working from home, we've asked that they stay at home so that we don't cross-contaminate any of our populations there. So for a lot of our managers too, you know, where this is the first time we've had people working from home, it feels like at the end of the day you're absolutely exhausted, but it's all about communication. And so we're asking our managers to make sure you over-communicate, check in on folks, have a video conference, make, you know, at least make sure that, you know, they are dressed and ready to go and that they're still alive. So that's been a good thing for us as well. We, in our dock locations, we've modified our protocols there. We have a person that is in a pickup truck, so as soon as a truck pulls into the facility, the truck stops the semi-truck, gives them a dock assignment. We ask that they not leave their truck while they get loaded, and that is mainly to protect our dock staff. And then we have set up an area in our parking lots that has a porta pot and a trailer with snacks, so that does give the truckers a place to kind of rest. But for our protection and theirs, we would ask that they not come into our dock areas. The last thing is we've been in constant communication, obviously with the folks at ASTA, the State Department of Ag. As it was mentioned earlier, actually our IT group just sent an email out about an hour ago. The folks at InfraGuard and the FBI, we've been in contact with them. There's been a huge uptick in cybercrime, and so as are the majority of our office workforce is now working from home over VPN connections, our IT group is concerned about what you're clicking on at home, because that also affects our corporate network here. And then the last thing that I kind of mentioned is just it's all about communication. And so we've encouraged that as much as we can here at Beck's Hybrids within our managers. And I'll tell you, it's been fantastic to look at the agricultural community and how everybody's adapted and stepped up. And our managers are doing a fantastic job of being adaptable and also serving the American farmer with excellence at the same time. So that's kind of what we're doing from a Beck's Hybrids point of view.
Brad, before we turn it over to John, I wanted to ask, have you had any instances of enforcement in terms of where you've had to, employees have had to show a local or state official that they are part of an ag worker?
We have not. We have, I didn't mention it, but we have provided a letter to our employees. We've had, there. So actually in the state of Indiana yesterday, there was a lot of communication. We talked to the governor's office and the Department of Ag here in Indiana. There were a couple of comments taken out of context by a state official, so much so that the governor called a news conference yesterday afternoon. In the state of Indiana, the state police has issued a memo to all agencies that they are not to ticket on this. And we have had zero issues of that happen. We have provided a letter, but with no guidance from any state or local office on what that letter should look like. We also realize that it carries no legal precedent there, but we have provided that letter to them.
Thanks. That was a terrific update. And John, we'll have you go, and then we'll open it up to the everyone else for questions.
Okay, Jane, thank you very much. John Schoniker, HM Close. Brad, great update. I'm going to try and avoid duplicating that, although there'll be some. And maybe I'll focus on what we're doing at research stations, where you know, we've got a lot of folks that are essential to you know, come to the facility and work in the field. So obviously things are changing rapidly. In fact, this disease was unknown 140 days ago. So, you know, information and actually the science is that we're working under and that's driving decisions is not yet definitive. So really it's about being a fast adapter and looking for constant improvement. Adjust as better information emerges. Like BACS, we put together an emergency response team focusing on communications, internal and external. And Brad, just reinforce what you said. I think it's critical because, you know, one of the things we need to do here is build confidence that people are going to be safe as possible anyway, and get the job done, but also looking at business continuity, how we're responding to government directives and forward planning. In California, we're certainly following state guidance. We're sheltering in place. Obviously, ag is exempt as an essential industry, but that doesn't mean that, you know, the common sense and safety rules don't apply. So all folks that can are working at home, and we're applying, you know, the distancing concepts to our daily activity. You know, maybe in vegetables, we're a little more used to dealing with plant diseases, and humans is often, you know, are an intermediary in there. So we've got a lot of our, you know, at least conceptually, are baked into our everyday processes to avoid spreading diseases. So we've got some of the basic skills and attitudes needed. But now with COVID, we're looking at, you know, applying those concepts on a people-to-people basis. So really about sanitation and distancing. So COVID and, you know, safety for all our companies is very important. So as part of our normal safety program, we're going into a deep dive with specifics surrounding COVID. So it's about one of the pieces of that is once you get basic processes in place is to build awareness, doing things like posters, reminders, and then information. As we get into the details, it's, you know, part of it is really about sort of touch point analysis, not only faces, but surfaces, you know, small common stuff and personal habits here make a difference. So we're looking at analyzing those and trying to block those points of spread, you know, kind of a HACCP analysis, if you will. Communications, again, important, so dealers, customers, and internally, and we are shipping. Again, looking at specific activities as we get into our planting season on our research station in Davis. So we've got to ride transplanters to get the crop in. What do we do? Physical barriers, sanitation for surfaces, touch points, et cetera. Things like lab hoods. In some cases, we have big hoods. We have two people working under them. That's no longer the case, one person, one hood. Like others, we're splitting break times and shifts to try and avoid, you know, those normal points in the day where people come together. So looking at where we need to add physical barriers and others. Cleaning and disinfection becomes very important. You know, we've potentially, well, we do have asymptomatic carriers. So even if nobody's sick, you know, those touch points and cleaning and disinfecting becomes very important. We put together a company SharePoint as part of the communication process so that we can get information to people. And I think all of us, the more information they have, even though there's still risk, the more confident we feel that we can do the right thing to address those risks. Obvious travel restrictions, permission only, both domestically and internationally, and, you know, essentially non-essential travel has been banned. We've got a letter that we put out, and thank ASTA for the help with that, but we've adopted that to various states. Two key areas we work in the U.S. are Idaho and California, so we've adopted those. I think Brad mentioned it, but if there are sick, you know, somebody turns up sick, you know, how do you respond in detail? So basically we're, you know, asking people to go home, contacting their doctors, and then bringing in and, you know, up in the sanitation in those places that person's been. Our challenge is we've got a lot of activities that are very seasonal, riding the transplanter, other activities around planting. And so we've really got to move quickly to apply those distancing techniques, you know, to that individual activity that may only happen for a couple weeks out of the year. So it really means that, you know, the frontline managers and supervisors have to build that structure around that short-term process. Field work typically can be spread out, except, again, where you come together. There are a few activities that we'll need to find a substitute for that, you know, overcome the distancing issue. And, again, my example is for transplanting. I know in California, which has a large commercial transplanting business for processing tomato production, those crews now have really upped their game and have a lot of the basic sanitation procedures in place. Just quick mention, other things, legal, you know, legal always seems to keep their job, so they're very busy with, you know, a thousand things surrounding this. I'll just reemphasize the IT security issue, absolutely hacking's on the rise, so please take care. Another thing, we've had people stop by and say, hey, we perform facility sanitation and disinfection. Great, you know, great resource to have, but as we start asking about how they do it, what chemicals they're using, what their protocol is, we find that they're often unprepared or inexperienced. So take care with that. Supplies, generally good, typical, what we've been hearing, PPE and sanitizers, you know, back or, you know, short in the supply chain. Our suppliers tell us they're coming. So we're good for now, but obviously there's going to be an ongoing need for those. And just thanks, shout out to California Seed Association. They're working with California Department of Food and Ag to try and identify those to see if California Department of Food and Ag can help, you know, break any log jams that might be based on procedural issues. Obviously, they can't do much with, you know, the physical supply chain. Just say that we've got, you know, evolving facts and understanding. So, you know, I think our basic approach is to overemphasize and be extreme with our procedures so that we, you know, kind of address the uncertainties as best as possible. And that's it for me, Jane. Thank you.
Thanks. That's great. Great for both of you guys. We'll open it up now for questions to either Brad or John. or Chris Vannabini or Krista, who are our state folks who are on the call.
To ask questions, that's 01, or you can always email me, ezimmerman@betterseed.org. I don't have any questions in the queue right now.
All right, we'll give everybody one more minute. All right, Ellen, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, happy to. So I'm just going to share some resources that we have on the website. We are continually updating the COVID-19 webpage, which you can find at betterseed.org under the News tab. Things you can find there include the Essential Critical Infrastructure Workers Guidance, immigration and labor updates, including the H-2A information, transportation information, which includes the declarations from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, Department of Labor guidance for employees, as well as state-by-state, international, trade, and phytosanitary information. We also have created a members-only COVID-19 page, and you can find that by clicking login in the top left corner of betterseed.org. Or there are links within the COVID-19 public hub that will take you directly to the members only site. Things you can find there include the sample template letters for critical workers, food industry guidance from FDA, business guidance regarding contracts, the Canadian American Business Council survey on impact for the U.S. and Canada border closure. And then we're also putting all of these recorded calls there as well, so you can reference them later. And we also added the Ag Retailers signature app that Virginia mentioned and guidance on no-contact deliveries. If you're having any issues logging in, you can email me, ezimmerman@betterseed.org, or feel free to call me, and I'd be happy to help you with your credentials to make sure you can get logged in. Other things that we have as far as resources, first, the Seed Foundation is compiling distance learning resources on its website. These resources are meant to assist teachers and parents during the school closures due to COVID-19. You can view the available resources by going to www.firsttheseedfoundation.org/resources. If you or your company know of any resources that would be suitable, please let us know. And then I also have permission from Chet with Ayaska and Chris from California to send them questions about things that they talked about. If you don't have their contact information, feel free to send the questions to me at ezimmerman@betterseed.org. I'd be happy to connect you with them as well. CSS exhibitor registration is now open, so our meeting in December, the website is live, and you can find information about CSS at the ask the website, betterseed.org, under the event tab. That is what I have for our reminder of resources, and are there any other questions? 01 to ask on the phone, or feel free to email me. I am still not seeing any questions in the queue or in my inbox, Jane, so I will hand it back to you and let you know if I see anything come in.
Okay, great. Well, thanks to everybody, and thanks for our guest speakers today. We really appreciate the time you took to participate in the call today. you know, I'm always struck by how broad the seed industry is, and I'm so grateful that a lot of our allied organizations are on today. I also wanted to note, I think Gary Kushner from Hogan Lovells is on, and they've been putting together quite a lot of useful information that we've put on our members only page as well. And, you know, we're analyzing what type of information you guys need and how we continue with these calls and what kind of information is helpful to share with you. It sounds like, you know, everybody is inundated with information, but it's good because there is so much happening. One of the things I wanted to mention in terms of the Department of Labor document that's on our website, that is the new guidance on for the paid sick leave that was part of the last COVID-19 bill that passed, since that is newly updated. And as I mentioned, you know, we've had a couple folks have mentioned about cybercrime, so we'll send out the link to the DHS cybercrime website as well for you all. And there's also additional information. It came up, more and more information is coming up about disinfecting your facility and guidance for that if you do have somebody who comes down with a sickness. So those are available on our website as well. And, you know, we've all mentioned, please get in touch with us. In particular, if you're having problems, USDA wants to know what's happening, specific issues they can address. So does NASA, the State Departments of Agriculture. So don't hesitate to be in touch if you're running into problems. And with that, you know, just please be in touch about what future topics you'd like us to cover. And with that, I think we're right at our time limit. So thanks for participating, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you.